Culinary Institute of Child Nutrition proudly welcomes you to The Mix-Up, an iBites production. I'm your host, Chef Patrick Garmong, mixing it up with culinary experts from the child nutrition community. Today, we are joined by Chef Kevin Frank, Chef and Assistant Director of the Detroit Public Schools Nutrition Program. Chef Kevin serves on the Culinary Institute of Child Nutrition's Advisory Board. He also serves as an advisory board member for the Detroit Food Policy Council, which advocates for food equity in the Detroit community. Chef, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. I'm really interested to hear how your school district in Detroit is managing during this COVID-19 crisis. When we were getting talking initially about coming on the show, you shared with me that you all have recently had an employee test positive for COVID-19, and I'm sure that sent some shockwaves through your program. Can you kind of share with us what it's been like to navigate that and how you all have handled that as those new events have unfolded in your district?
So it's definitely been interesting, to say the least. From a logistical standpoint, we obviously had to close down. It was on one of our multi-unit managers that tested positive, so we had to close down and sanitize the schools that he was over for our distribution, which made our distribution numbers a little bit lower for the weekend. It was a little bit of a strain on the community, obviously, because they had to find different spots to go pick up the food, which is a little bit difficult for some people who maybe don't have their own personal transportation. So the number one priority was getting the clothes, getting the schools sanitized and up and running as quickly as possible so that we could get back to normal operations. From a staff morale standpoint, it was really just about making sure that everybody had the information, making sure that everybody knew that it happened, and making sure that everyone knew that everyone who was in contact with that person was quarantining. So we like right now, actually, I'm voluntarily quarantining for the next week because I hadn't been in contact with the guy who tested positive for about a week and a half when we found out. So I'm quarantining for the next week just to make sure that, you know, we don't have any issues. I'm happy to say that I'm symptom free and everything is good with me anyway.
Hey, I'm glad to hear that. It's got to be scary, right? I mean, I can't imagine what it's like knowing that you potentially are infected and going home. I know you've got children, and just the ripple effect of that mentally, it's got to have an impact, not just on you personally, but on your staff and as a leader of people, worrying about those people as well and their families. You mentioned that you had to shut down a few sites. How many sites are you all currently serving at, or were you serving at before you had to shut down a few?
So they're back up and running again, or they will be Thursday, which is our next distribution day. So we do two distributions a week, Monday and Thursday. Monday we distribute for 3 days. Thursday we distribute for 4 days. We're running 19 sites when we're at full capacity. And those 19 sites, we serve about 8,500 people, which translates to about 4 day distributions, we're looking at 32,000 or 35,000 breakfasts and 32,000 or 35,000 lunches. So
wow,
we've already done over half a million meals in the past month.
That's amazing. That is truly an amazing level of food production. What type of meals are you all serving? Are you using a lot of prepackaged grab-and-go stuff? Are you guys doing some form of production? Like, what's working best for you? I mean, that's a huge number of meals that you all are serving. How are you able to accomplish that with your production system?
So initially, we were actually preparing food. We were heating and then cooling food, and that proved to be entirely too much from a logistical standpoint, especially when we had to consolidate. Because when we first started, we had 58 sites open, and wow, it was a little bit easier because we didn't have a lot of demand on any individual site. But as things rolled on, and as we started to experience shutdowns in the state, like, you know, mandatory stay-at-home orders, we had to consolidate, and that's how we went down to the 19 sites. When that happened, we moved to distributing frozen food. Obviously, we had to for the multiple days. And even then, we weren't getting individually packaged items because of the supply chain issues and the demand that you know, there is nationally for those products. It was a little bit difficult for us to get them. We are going to be moving to individually wrapped frozen items for our first distribution in May, which is going to be Monday. So right now we're kind of taking what we had for the students, whether it was, you know, things that are easily wrapped, hamburgers, pizza, chicken sandwiches, things of that nature. And we're wrapping them ourselves, still frozen, and sending them home with heating instructions. Because we don't do a lot of full scratch cooking here. We do fresh vegetables, fresh fruits, things of that nature, but our protein is minimally processed and pre-cooked. So we're sending that minimally processed pre-cooked protein home with heating instructions, along with fresh vegetables, fresh fruits, things of that nature.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah, I mean, you're still doing, assembling those sandwiches and putting all those components together. I mean, that's still a production process, and that that's a lot of labor. You know, I'm sure my staff, when I was operating, would have been like, oh, we're just sending stuff out. Awesome. And then when I told them they're putting together sandwiches, it's probably been like, oh, okay, different than I thought. So there's still a lot of work that your team's putting in, and the number of meals that you all are serving, it's an incredible number. You mentioned some supply chain issues. What were some of the common products that you were having trouble sourcing, and or maybe some items that there was a surplus of that you all were trying to figure out how to use in creative ways?
So in the beginning, the biggest issue with the supply chain was paper goods, you know, getting to-go bags, getting microlite containers, things of that nature, things that we could send home that were disposable, because not only are we looking for that, but so are bars and restaurants, because the bars and restaurants that are open, they're only open for carryout operations and delivery operations right now. So there was kind of a run on carryout supplies, and we got kind of caught short on that end in the beginning, and that has since been taken care of. We were okay with that. From a food or ingredient standpoint, we really haven't had too many shortages. I think the biggest issue was the individually wrapped items, and the way I got around that was by telling our broadline distributor to source considerably more than we needed from a variety standpoint, so that even if we couldn't get the amounts of each individual item, like if I wanted an individually wrapped, like a personal pizza, if I can't get the 30,000 servings that I need in that personal pizza, if I can get 20,000 servings of that, and then 15,000 servings of Bosco sticks or, you know, cheese filled breadsticks, something of that nature, then right, at least I'll still have enough of the food with the same flavor profile to pack up and send home.
Yeah, nimble and flexible, right? I mean, that's the key to it, making sure that kids are getting fed and kind of cobbling it together when you have to. That's insightful, and it's a smart way to do it. How have you been able to socially distance your production team, your staff, as they're, you know, compiling these food items together? Are you putting workstations certain feet apart? Are you rotating who's coming in and out on different shifts? Like, what's that look like for you as a manager of people trying to create a logistic plan to get that many meals out and maintain the safety of your staff internally?
So what we found out is that our staff prefers being with the same people over and over again, as it pertains to the safety piece, because they know where each other has been. So in order to keep the same staff around each other at all times, we push production out into the cafeterias, out into the hallways. In some cases, we move cafeteria tables out and push them into the hallway. So that way, like you said, the workstations are set up, but they're set up, you know, considerably more than 6 feet apart. And then because a lot of the prep is being done on cafeteria tables or on prep tables, we put them side by side. You can still space people 6 feet apart, even at those individual workstations. Lots of workstations, and our footprint has like tripled as it pertains to production within the buildings because of this, for now anyway.
That's a great plan. That's really intuitive. Yeah, I mean, a lot of school kitchens are pretty small, so being able to spread out and use a lot of the different square footage of the school building, that's a really smart plan, and keeping people safe is top priority. I mean, I mean, you saw, you know, the effect of having a site or two go down and the burden that places on the community. So I think it's just really, really good planning on the part of your team to use that square footage and create those social distancing barriers.
Getting back to, then when you said something about the safety of the community, it reminded me, getting back to us, to things that were in shortage, PPE obviously was hugely crucial to find. And for the longest time, we were fortunate enough to get some masks donated, I believe by Ford, or it may not have been Ford, but one of the big three donated some masks. And as production has ramped up in different countries and different places around here, we've been able to get those in. But that was, that's hugely crucial. And it's, our governor actually has just made it mandatory that anybody that leaves the home, whether you're going out to work or going to shop, has to wear a mask as part of her most recent executive order. But before that, we made it mandatory for our staff, just obviously for the safety standpoint, but also, to be completely honest with you, for the psychological benefit as well, because it makes people feel safer, regardless of how effective it actually really is.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That mental knowledge that those around you are being safe and you're practicing safety kind of helps create a deeper sense of awareness and comfort in the workplace. I think we've all seen the CDC, some of those different infographics out there showing the effects of you wearing a mask, just me wearing a mask, both of us wearing a mask, and how the chances of spreading the virus are greatly decreased if we're all stepping up and wearing a mask. So kudos to your program for identifying that early on and making that a requirement to protect everybody's safety, and not just their physical, but their mental safety, and make them feel at ease a little bit more, as much as they can be in the workplace. Now, we've been at this for almost 2 months now, operating in these new conditions. Have you had a moment to reflect and think about what a key takeaway may be for you from this, as you move forward and back into, quote unquote, normal operations, whenever that may be? Is there a key lesson that maybe's come to mind as we move forward?
So to be completely honest with you, for me, the biggest takeaway is not a surprise, because this experience kind of reiterates how important what we do on a daily basis is. And I just hope that society at large can kind of get that same takeaway, because there's still kind of a negative stigma as it pertains to school lunch and to lunch ladies. I'm using air quotes to lunch ladies, in the media and in our national consciousness, for lack of a better term. And I think that the knowledge that these school lunch ladies are the people that are going out every day, right, putting themselves at risk, putting their families at risk to ensure that those of us who don't have access to food do. And they're doing it for what a lot of people would consider low wages is admirable, to say the least. And it should be celebrated. It should definitely be spoken about, I think, more than it is. And it's also something that, moving forward, when this is all said and done, when we get back to whatever the new normal is going to be, it's something that needs to be brought to the forefront. Because yes, we all know that doctors are and police officers and firemen are essential employees, but so are the people who handle our food, so are the people who process our food, so are the people who make sure that our food is ready and available to us. Those people need to be taken care of, I think, a little bit better than they are. And I'll get off my Food Policy Council soapbox now.
No, please. You're absolutely right. These are the people out there taking care of nourishing a nation. And they're not, the work they're doing is beyond essential. They're literally nourishing a nation, and they need to be treated with the same level of dignity, respect, and value as, like you stated, doctors and police officers and all the others out there that are also putting themselves at risk and on the front line. But these folks are doing it with passion and love and knowing that there's children who may not get another meal elsewise. So that's what gets them up every day. And I just cannot thank you and your staff enough for everything you've done to serve over 1 million meals so far. Do I remember that correctly? Yeah, we're half a million.
About half a million right now. Yep.
We're going to be clipping up on 1 million pretty quick though, I'm sure, the way your numbers are keep growing. So Chef, thank you for everything that you and your team are doing. It's been a pleasure having you on. When we get this podcast going, talking about other culinary practices that are non-COVID related, once we get back to whatever the new normal is, we'd love to have you all on and talk about how you all are doing some cool things up there in Detroit to enhance the culinary experience for students and child nutrition programs.
I'd love to. Thank you for the offer.
Absolutely. Chef, thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Join us next time as we continue to mix it up with culinary experts from the child nutrition community. I've been your host, Chef Patrick Garmong from the Culinary Institute of Child Nutrition. Hey, don't forget to wash your hands.
This project has been funded at least in part with federal funds from the U.S. Department of Agriculture Food and Nutrition Service through an agreement with the Institute of Child Nutrition at the University of Mississippi. The contents of this publication do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, nor does mention of trade names, commercial products, or organizations imply endorsement by the U.S. government. The University of Mississippi is an EEOAA Title VI, Title IX, Section 504, ADA, ADEA employer. In accordance with federal law and U.S. Department of Agriculture policy, this institution is prohibited from discriminating on the basis of race, color, national origin, sex, age, or disability. To file a complaint of discrimination, write USDA Director, Office of Civil Rights, Room 326W, Whitten Building, 1400 Independence Avenue, Southwest, Washington, D.C., 202-509-410, or call 202-720-5964. USDA is an equal opportunity provider and employer.